Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Misa back.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Okay, hour two is here, 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. I do want to bring one thing to your attention before we go to the phones. Check this out. This is from the Daily Wire, or the Daily Caller, excuse me. The Biden administration's Department of Health and Human Services has told a Catholic hospital in Oklahoma to put out a sanctuary candlelight, a command that the Catholic hospital says violates their religious beliefs. Now, I just want to, for those who are not Catholic, let me pause for a minute so you understand what we're talking about here. If you should ever go into a Catholic church, and I hope you do, and spend some time, Jesus is there in the Blessed Sacrament. In most Catholic churches, you'll find the tabernacle against the back wall of the sanctuary. I don't want to use Catholic terminology that may confuse you, but when you go into a Catholic church, typically it tends to be sort of long, like a long rectangle, and at the far end would be the sanctuary where the altar is. And typically, the tabernacle is this metal box, bigger than a mailbox, maybe the size of a microwave oven. You know, it's not gigantic, although in some churches they can be quite large. But it is a very strong, secure, metal, ornate box in which the Holy Eucharist is reposed. It has a lock on it. So after Mass, when the priest has consecrated the bread into the very body, blood, soul, and divinity of Jesus, it still looks like bread. It still has the appearance of bread, but it's actually now the real presence of Jesus. Well, typically in an average parish, there will be more hosts that are consecrated than are consumed at Holy Communion. So the remaining hosts could be 10, could be 100, could be 200, whatever the remainders are. Those consecrated hosts are placed in the tabernacle, and the door is locked so that nobody can get to them and tamper with them and profane them, and so that they will be there for the next Mass. So when the time comes to distribute Holy Communion, there are sufficient hosts that have been consecrated, so they remain there to be distributed. So the reason I'm going into that detail is so you'll understand the context of what I'm about to share with you. The sanctuary candle, or the sanctuary lamp as it's often called, is when you go into a Catholic church, typically red. So the glass is red, and it's hanging in the sanctuary. And when you go into a Catholic church, look for that lamp, and you'll see it. It's not hard to find. And when you see that, that is your sign to know that Jesus is present in the tabernacle, that he's there. Now, if it should happen that, let's say, they're doing renovations in the church that day, and they've got to, you know, they're going to have workers in there, and who knows what's going on. Well, the parish priest, very often in a case like that, he would remove the Blessed Sacrament to a tabernacle either in the rectory or in the sacristy, which is where the priest puts on his vestments and all that. And the way you would know that Jesus is not there is, number one, the tabernacle door would be left open as a sign Jesus is not here, and the sanctuary lamp would be quenched. The candle would be snuffed out. So for that reason, when you go into a Catholic church and you see that, you can know that Jesus is present in the tabernacle. That's what this is about. So back to this article. The Biden administration, and by the way, I think Joe Biden has kind of made a cottage industry of reminding everybody as often as possible that he's a devout Catholic. So that's kind of the backdrop to this. He's a Catholic president, and his administration is going after this St. Francis health system in Oklahoma, saying, you have to snuff out that candle. you're not allowed to have, well, I'm just going to read to you, okay? The federal government told St. Francis Health System Senior Vice President and General Counsel Michael J. Lissau that the sanctuary candle in the chapel in the hospital was in violation of the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Office's fire safety requirements. The government says the hospital will no longer be able to accept Medicare and Medicaid funds as long as that candle in the chapel is lit. Do you see how ridiculous this is? As long as the Catholic Church has been around 2,000 years, the Biden administration has been around for what? 36 months? So what this is all about is you don't get any money from the federal government. You don't get any Medicare and Medicaid services because you have that darn candle lit in your chapel, in your hospital. And until and unless you snuff out that candle, you don't get any federal funds. Exactly. I'm going to need more than that. You better put some on too. How does it look?
Not good, but it helps.
Yeah, it's on pretty tight. Because my head will explode. The Beckett Law Religious Liberty Defense Organization. Hang on, give me another piece. I need some more. I can feel the head, my cranium is about to burst. Hang on, let me get that on there. Okay. All right. I'm going to try. The Beckett Law Religious Liberty
Defense. All I can see is your mustache.
I know, it's all covered.
Everything else is covered.
My eyes and my mustache. Well, at least my head's not going to explode, I hope. Okay, third time's a charm. The Beckett Law and Religious Liberty Defense Organization sent a letter to the HHS Department of the Biden administration. Don't forget, Joe Biden wants you to know how devout of a Catholic he is. Disputing the agency's requirement, arguing that removing the candle in compliance with the guidance would violate the religious hospital's First Amendment rights. So from their statement, they say, St. Francis cannot do this as a matter of faith. And so in 25 days, the federal government intends to disaccredit and thereby effectively shutter this premier health system, which includes the number one hospital in Oklahoma and the 12th largest hospital in the nation, all because St. Francis Hospital refuses to abandon its religious beliefs and extinguish the sanctuary lamp. It's that ridiculous. The hospital, according to the article, lights the candle, which represents the living flame of Christ's presence in the hospital chapel, which the Beckett Law Firm points out is far removed from any medical equipment and patients. It's in a chapel way over there down the hall where people who want to go to Mass go. It's not near oxygen tanks. It's not near patients. It's not near operating theaters or any of those things. It poses no risk to anybody at any time in any way. It's contained within glass, and the glass of the candle is contained within the glass of the sanctuary lamp.
So where's the problem?
I think I'm running out of duct tape.
Fact.
Federal regulations require that hospitals, quote, have written fire control plans that contain provisions for prompt reporting of fires, extinguishing fires, protection of patients, personnel, and guests, evacuation, and cooperation with firefighting authorities. The government's demand, according to St. Francis, is absurd and unlawful, and they're right about that. It is targeting St. Francis's sincere beliefs without any good reason. The government has a simple choice, either stop this attack on St. Francis's faith or expect a legal firestorm. Good choice of words, guys. It's just that stupid. I mean, this is extra strength stupid, if you ask me. That the federal government is saying, it's kind of like the Little Sisters of the Poor. First of all, they're religious sisters. They're consecrated celibates. And the federal government was for the longest time demanding that they pay for contraception and, sundry other items, sex change operations, abortions, etc. It's a bunch of nuns, you guys, helping the poor. And you want to stomp on them because, first of all, they don't need contraception. not that anyone does. They don't need to pay for abortions. These are religious sisters who pray and help poor people. And the federal government said, well, sorry, unless you fund these things, which we know is entirely against your moral code, and it would be a betrayal of everything that you hold dear, but we don't care. It's that kind of thing. It's that kind of thing on stilts. The sanctuary lamp in the Catholic hospital, which has been lit for who knows however long that hospital has been there, however long that chapel has been there, probably many decades, if you ask me, not posing any danger to anyone in any way. And suddenly now our devoutly Catholic president's administration has decided that's the hill they want to die on. Or better put, that's the hill they want the St. Francis Hospital to die on. And so it's now a tug of war. Who's going to win? I think that the hospital's going to win. And the absurdity of this, of these utterly unreasonable demands tied to the fact that they're going to withhold federal monies that are desperately needed. And furthermore, they're going to inflict pain and misery on the surrounding community just because a candle is lit in a chapel in the hospital. I think I'm done with this. I'm afraid if I keep going, even the duct tape won't help. It does look pretty good, though. It's kind of like a helmet. You know what I think? I need to save this one. No, it won't work. It won't work because it's
good luck.
You know, it's getting it off the hair that's the worst part. That's the duct tape helps in the moment, but getting it off the hair, it's not.
Yes. So that's true.
That's not her. Who's that? I know
that
who that is.
That was,
I don't even
Sarah.
Know. Oh, that's Sarah.
That was Sarah, who, this is off topic, but she is dressed up like Rey from Star Wars today. It's awesome. I mean, it's...
Oh, is that who that I saw in the
that
hallway?
That is who you saw, yep.
Oh.
Yeah.
She had a lightsaber, but it wasn't on. So.
Thank goodness.
Yeah. Whew. Okay, well, there's that. And please post that just so people, if they see this can't be real. This has got to be a joke. It's not a joke. I mean, in some ways, it is a really big joke, but it's not a joke. So, federal government, you guys need to back down and back off because you're being stupid. I'm telling you. Let's go to Jay in Utah. Hi, Jay.
Hi, Patrick. I have quick background and then quick question. So I have a LDS Mormon neighbor. Mm-hmm. He's selling his home. We're good friends. I was speaking to him. I said, I should get you a St. Joseph statue to bury in the front yard so you can get your house sold. Mm-hmm. It's worked for me before. And I tried to get on the web last night because he mentioned, he says, well, as long as it doesn't cross the line of idolatry, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, online you get on Catholic Answers, you get, you know, priests that say don't ever do it, priests that say, oh, it's okay, things like that. So first mm-hmm. of all, I just kind of want your opinion on that. And then the second thing is a resource that I can go to explain to him why we don't practice idolatry in the Catholic Church.
Okay, two important questions, and they dovetail. So I will, first of all, say I myself, I reject the practice of burying a statue of St. Joseph in the yard, upside down, front yard, backyard, side yard. I've heard different people say different things, you know, and I have heard people, too, say, I sold a house because I buried St. Joseph's statue. I reject that, and I do reject it as superstition. In fact, I've met people who don't care a whit about St. Joseph. They're not even Catholic, but they swear by these St. Joseph statue kits, and they tell their, you know, real estate customers, bury the statue. Well, we're Jewish. We don't believe in that stuff. Yeah, it's fine, but it'll help you sell your house. So it is, from everything I can see, for many people, most people, it is a form of superstition. And the church says, don't be superstitious. There is a place for sacramentals, and a statue of St. Joseph certainly is a sacramental. And there are instances where you can hear about, let's say, the founder of a religious order who wants to acquire a property to build a seminary or a church or something like that, and the owner won't sell it to him. And in times past, it's been known that if you put, let's say, a miraculous metal, maybe bury that in the ground or something, that miraculous things can happen. And I don't gainsay that kind of a role for a Catholic sacramental when it's used in a way that does not smack of superstition. But what we're talking about here, where you can go into, you can get them online, or you can go into even Catholic bookstores, I've seen them, where they sell a kit, you know, with the statue of St. Joseph, and here are the instructions. You bury it upside down in the backyard, and it's going to sell your house. And so personally, I not only don't accept that, I don't encourage that. I actively discourage it. So if you heard somebody on Catholic Answers say that, well, I'm in the same category as they are for that reason. Now, the church talks about not only superstition, but also the valid use of sacramentals in a non-superstitious way. People can be superstitious about anything, walking under an open ladder, black cats, broken mirrors. Some people literally knock on wood. There are lots of superstitions that exist in modern life. There are some hotels that don't have a 13th floor. I mean, they do have a 13th floor, but it skips from 12 to 14 because people are superstitious. Or Friday the 13th, what have you. So superstition is pretty rampant. And into that mix, I would throw things like people who follow horoscopes and other nonsensical things like that. So for her part, the church says, avoid anything like that. We live in God's providence. We trust in God. We ask God for the things that we need. And if it's His will that we receive them, like selling a house, so be it. But we don't try to conciliate or manipulate hidden powers through the use of amulets or good luck charms or things of that nature. So all of those things are readily spelled out in the Catechism of the Catholic Church, as are the teaching on sacramentals. So that's something I would encourage you to do. Go to the catechism if you want to have those kind of details. Now, I think maybe I lost the thread. You had two questions. Did I get the first one sufficiently? Do we need to talk more about the St. Joseph statue?
No,
I know
wonderful.
You had a second part.
Yeah, the second part was just a resource that will help me understand and explain why, you know, the Catholic practice of praying to saints and is not idolatry or some other bad thing.
Yeah. Okay. So let me first just tweak that word. Typically you would hear it called idolatry because it has to do with idols. And it's, you know, splitting of hairs on how it's pronounced, but I think more people are going to recognize it as idolatry. And this is talked about in the Catechism of the Catholic Church, and it's in beginning in paragraph 2110. So if you want to share with your Mormon friend the church's official teaching, this is where you'll find it in its most current form. And I'll just read you the pertinent section. The first commandment forbids, that's have no false gods before me. The first commandment forbids honoring gods other than the one Lord who has revealed himself to his people. It proscribes superstition and irreligion. Superstition, in some sense, represents a perverse excess of religion. Irreligion is the vice contrary by defect to the virtue of religion. Defect in this context means that it's lacking something that should be there. Superstition is the deviation of religious feeling and of the practices this feeling imposes. It can even affect the worship we offer the true God. When one attributes an importance in some way magical to certain practices that are otherwise lawful or necessary, to attribute the efficacy of prayers or of sacramental signs, like St. Joseph statues, to their mere external performance apart from the interior dispositions that they demand, is to fall into superstition. Now, it goes on from there, and it parses out other examples of this: divination, magic, seances, tarot cards, all the various ways in which this can be seen. It's all there. So again, you want to begin in paragraph 2110. I think that would be helpful to establish for him that this is the case. Now, if you want a biblical overview, Jay, on why Catholics have sacred images. So why do we have icons? Why do we have statues and other images of Jesus and Mary and the saints? I have a free article for you on that. And you can get it by going to relevantradio.com/Patrick. Be be sure to put the /Patrick on there. relevantradio.com/Patrick. Click on links, click on articles. And the specific one that addresses this in detail from Scripture is called Any Friend of God's is a Friend of Mine. Any Friend of God's is a Friend of Mine. I have a whole section in there on the biblical basis for images, statues. And it also takes into account what does the Bible say about idolatry. So I'll offer you that as a resource that you can get right away. It's free. relevantradio.com/Patrick. Click on links, click on articles, and the one you want is Any Friend of God's is a Friend of Mine. And with that, I'll take a break, and I'll be right back with more of your phone calls. Dial this number, and we'll get you on the air. Thank you, Jay, by the way. Thank you. 888-914-9149. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. How are you aligning your financial plan with your Catholic values? Is your Catholic faith influencing your financial future? Our sponsor, Creative Planning, has options. More info, including disclosures, at creativeplanning.com/Catholic Focus.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Have a question?
Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
Oh my, that was good.
I gotcha?
Yes.
Oh, good.
That was real good.
Very good.
You done good, Cyrus. You done real good.
Good. Thank you, sir.
You sounded like a Wookiee just now. All right. 888-914-9149. That's the number to call. Let's go to Leanne in Denver. Good morning, Leanne. Hello, Leanne.
Oh, good morning. Sorry. Oh. Thank you. Yeah, I was just wondering with the attack on the Catholic hospital in Tulsa, and I was born in Tulsa, but I live in Denver now. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on the bishops not coming out and correcting the president. And then now with this attack on the hospital, I'm just wondering if the bishops are kind of afraid of the president because, I mean, if they come out and speak out against like so many of his policies, will more of this kind of thing happen?
So. Well, I must say I am grateful to those stalwart bishops who have done exactly what you're describing, come out forcefully, publicly denouncing, in whatever administration, this being the most current one, things that are contrary to the faith. I'm thinking of Archbishop Nauman of Kansas City, for example, Bishop Aquila of Denver, Archbishop Cordiglione of San Francisco, Bishop Tobin, most recently of Providence, Rhode Island. And, you know, thankfully, it's a fairly lengthy list of bishops who have come out publicly and denounced things like that. So I'd like to begin by acknowledging that, number one, and saying how I think that's a great example that they're setting for other bishops who may, for whatever reason, not do that. Keeping in mind, of course, as well, that public denunciation is one of the tools that bishops have at their disposal. It's not the only tool. And as the old proverb goes, if the only tool you have is a hammer, you'll tend to approach every problem as if it were a nail. And so sometimes things that are done behind the scenes, perhaps quietly out of view, can be very important. And you and I, of course, are not privy to what those things might be. Bishop Daly, to use yet another example, he just came out in the last week or so and publicly denounced an effort on the part of lawmakers he's the Bishop of Spokane. So lawmakers in that state that are saying that they're going to try to force Catholic priests to divulge what they hear in confession. And Bishop Daly courageously came out publicly and told the press, I and all my priests will be willing to go to jail rather than to cave into the dictates of our so-called superiors in the government. So I don't mean to suggest that most bishops do this. I don't think that's true. And I think some bishops are quiet because maybe in their heart of hearts, they are okay with some of the things that are being handed down from our so-called superiors in government. I don't know, and it's not for me to know. I can't know anyone's heart. But I am grateful for those bishops who do, and in some cases on a regular basis, do the work of speaking up and speaking out. I think we should emphasize that. I don't know if that answers your question, but that's my take on it, Shirley.
Yeah, no, it's good to remember all those things. I guess I just keep waiting for them to come out in concert as one voice, but I guess maybe that's not how they work.
Well, they do. So let me give you another example. If you look at the, I don't think I can remember exactly when the most recent iteration of this was, but the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, which is approximately, I'm just going to throw out a round figure, something like 250 bishops, maybe a little bit less than that. They meet every X number of years, maybe it's every year, and they vote on certain things and they make certain announcements from the standpoint of their bishops, of themselves as bishops. And they yet again reiterated that abortion is the single greatest, most urgent moral problem of our generation. And they pointed out, it's not the only one, certainly there are many others that are very important. But in terms of the urgency, they've upheld what Pope John Paul II himself has said, and they publicly announced that, even though there were some bishops who very notably disagreed with that. And in the vote, they voted against this. Now, thankfully, it was a small minority, but the majority of bishops in this country as a group spoke out publicly against the federal government in terms of the context of this on an issue like abortion. So they do from time to time do it corporately. And it's easy to lose track of because you're busy and I'm busy and you've got your life and things that you're doing. So when these things happen, it may not necessarily get onto your radar screen. But there's an example of where they do things like that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, thank you so much for that explanation. Yeah, and love Relevant Radio. I listen every day. I'm kind of a fanatic.
I love it. You're my kind of listener, Leanne. Thank you.
And you have lots of listeners in Denver, I know. So anyway,
we love Denver. Shout out to Denver and all the Colorado people out there. Well, thank you, Leanne.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, thank you. God bless you.
Thank you. You too. Yeah. And just as a footnote, I'm aware there are people who make it, you know, it's their livelihood. It's all they do is denounce bishops on their blog posts or their videos or, you know, whatever. That's how they make their bread and butter, is to gin up outrage and fury and make people angry. And very often, for some of these people anyway, it's the bishops who are their target. So, all right, you know, I'll just leave it at that and say there's no lack of people who see it as their bounden duty to spend every waking moment denouncing the bishops. And yet there are really good bishops who do make this effort. As I said, not all of them, many of them, some of them in important dioceses. And I mean, every diocese is important, but what I mean, prominent dioceses. And there are bishops who are speaking up and speaking out, and we should never lose sight of that. And we should thank them. So if your bishop is one of those bishops, send him a nice card. You know, maybe stick a Texas Roadhouse gift card in there for him so that he can have a nice meal from time to time. I'm pretty sure bishops have good meals in general. But show your appreciation. Write a letter of encouragement. Lord knows they get all sorts of static from people who don't like what they either see or what they think they see. So support can go a long way, and your prayers, of course, as well. Let's go to Gabriella now in Houston, California. Hello, Gabriella.
Hello, Patrick.
Nice to chat with you again.
It's nice to talk with you, too.
All right. What's on the docket this morning?
Well, my question was the Luminous Mystery. That's a newer one.
Yeah.
So my question was, what was the one before that? Like, because that one's only on Thursday, so then what did people used to use?
Oh, I see what you mean. So what are you asking about, which days do you say which mystery's on? Is that what you mean?
Like before, like Luminous is a newer one. So like, right. And we pray the Luminous on Thursday. So like before Luminous was around, what did they pray on Thursday?
Okay. Now I understand. Yeah. Well, it depends upon the custom. So you can pray the three traditional mysteries of the Rosary are the glorious, the joyful, and the sorrowful mysteries. And you can pray those any day that you want. Now, there's a certain custom. So, for example, on Fridays, typically the sorrowful mysteries would be prayed. On Sundays, typically the glorious mysteries would be prayed. Now, Pope John Paul II, he wrote an encyclical called Rosarium Virginis Mariae. That's Latin, and it refers to the Rosary of the Virgin Mary. And in that encyclical, he said, here are the luminous mysteries that he had kind of put together. And he did it by way of a suggestion. He said, these are here also if you want to pray them. He didn't mandate them. He didn't say you must pray the luminous mysteries. You know, he recognized the traditional nature for going back to, you know, about 800 years now of the Rosary in the form that we have always known it. The glorious, the joyful, and the sorrowful mysteries. So really, it's a matter of custom. Now, my custom, for what it's worth, and it's just, you know, just my personal custom, is I pray the sorrowful mysteries on Monday. On Tuesday, I pray the joyful mysteries. On Wednesday, I pray the sorrowful mysteries. On Thursday, I pray the glorious mysteries. On Friday, I pray the sorrowful mysteries again. Saturday, the joyful mysteries. And Sunday, the glorious mysteries. So when I'm praying those mysteries of the Rosary, for me, and I don't know how long ago, but many years ago, I sort of fell into this rhythm where those were the mysteries that I would pray on those days. Now, there's a longstanding custom where those are prayed on different days. So it really kind of depends upon what suits you. And for me, Friday being a day of penance, it's appropriate in my mind to pray the sorrowful mysteries on that day. But you have freedom. You could pray all three, and you can add in the luminous mysteries too if you want to. Some people pray all three mysteries of the Rosary every day, so 15 decades instead of just five. But it's up to you, and the customs that are there are actually outlined in that encyclical by Pope John Paul II. Rosarium Virginis Mariae. So if you're interested in reading what he had to say, he gives into a lot more detail. Does
okay.
that help?
Thank you very much.
You're most welcome. And to make it easy for you, we will get a link to that for you if you go on the show page. I don't know if your mom and dad let you go on the internet. Hopefully they only do that in a kind of limited way. But you can find it you'll be able to find it in a few minutes on the show page. So relevantradio.com/Patrick.
Okay, thank you. Because I was just asking, because we, every night we go to the little like tap that says pray on the app, and then we pray the rosary that was previously recorded with Father Rocky, and then there's the certain days since we've been going off of. So I was just curious about the luminous one.
Yeah, so that's, and what's nice about this document that I mentioned is that the Holy Father, he explains it in detail. So he not only talks about the luminous mysteries, but he also talks about what's the custom on when to pray them. So you can read all about that. I think that would actually make for a good homework assignment, maybe for your homeschooled, as I recall, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so that might make a good, you know, write a paper on that perhaps. And that could be cool.
Okay. Thank you very much. Have a good day.
You're welcome. Great chatting with you. Thank you. Cyrus, she's 13 years old, but she could be 22 years old. She's so poised.
Yeah, I remember when she called in when she was 10.
Yep.
Nice to hear her again. It's been a while. So thanks for calling back.
That's right. Thank you. That's a great family. I think we've also heard from one of her siblings, Gino, if I'm not mistaken. Let's take a break, and we'll come right back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show. There's time for you to call in. There's not a lot more time, but if you call in now, we can get you on the air this hour, 888-914-9149.
Star Wars, nothing but Star Wars.
Today, we'd like to thank Priscilla, who's listening in California, for donating her Pontiac Firebird. You can join thousands of other listeners in donating old vehicles by visiting relevantradio.com/car. That's relevantradio.com/car.
This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
Sarah, do you remember yesterday there was a caller, a gentleman by the name of Mohammed? He's called in before a few times over the years. And do you remember he called in yesterday and told me that I was, I don't know if he said lying, but basically
he said, you were wrong.
Yeah.
I think that's safe to say.
You remember that call?
I do, yeah.
So I was reading a report about, or I referred to, the long and unfortunate, to say the least, history of Muslims destroying Catholic churches. So that was what I said. He responded, he called in, he says that that's wrong. It's a misinterpretation of history. These things didn't really happen. So I rattled off 2, 3, 4 examples, you know, from history. And he said that those were not real. Okay. And if you want to hear this conversation, it was on yesterday's show. I forget which hour. It might have been the third hour. So you can listen, because I want to be fair. But he was really adamant that I was wrong in misrepresenting the case, because I was saying that Muslims destroy Christian churches. Not all, not even most, but some do. So it just so happens, after the show is over, this story, this is from the Syriac Press, so Syria, Middle East, this pops up on my radar screen after the show yesterday. Let me just read it to you. On Sunday, the sound of the bells ringing at Mar Tuma Church in Mosul, Iraq, marked a significant milestone in the city's recovery from the devastation caused by the Islamic State. Syriac Catholic Archbishop of Mosul, Benedict Yonan Hano, presided over the divine liturgy for the inauguration of the rebuilt church. You may say, the rebuilt church, what happened? Well, ISIS destroyed it. The Islamic State destroyed this church. And in the article, it gives the specifics about, you know, what happened. So, I mean, this is just a story that came out yesterday about Muslims destroying, down to the ground, a Catholic church. So, I mean, I don't want to beat a dead horse. I don't want to, you know, pile on or anything. But, I mean, this is yet another example of what I'm talking about. I wish it weren't true. I wish that what Muhammad had said on the air yesterday were true. I'd rather that he be right and not me on this particular point, but I am right. And, you know, I wish it weren't that way, but there's yet another example. Cyrus will post a link to that story if you want. Just yet another example of another Catholic church, you know, in a broader sense, being destroyed by Muslims. And we can even get into what's going on with Boko Haram in Nigeria, et cetera, et cetera. I think that proves the point. Anyway, I just wanted to mention that. 888-914-9149. Also, for your good to know file, you might find this particularly galling, Cyrus. And I don't know if we're out of duct tape, but a Pennsylvania school board. It decided to close, and this is the Eastern Lebanon County School District, by the way. They decided to, after a vote of 8-1, to close all the locker rooms for all the students in the school district, because there was an uproar from girls and their parents saying, we don't want guys who identify as girls to be in the showering rooms, in the locker rooms with our daughters. And so what did these dingbats do? They voted 8-1 to just shut down all the locker rooms. Everybody gets punished. This is how stupid this is. Oh, by the way, I got an email. I'm going to keep a popcorn trail here. Got an email from Patrick just a few minutes ago. He's listening in Green Bay. Shout out, by the way, Patrick. He says, Patrick, I think you're being way too kind to those responsible for the intentional persecution of Catholics in the cases of those listed in the subject line. He's talking about the Oklahoma candle controversy, the Little Sisters of the Poor. He says, you're being way too kind by calling them stupid. I can tell you without a doubt that there exists in government, politics, the judiciary, the law, healthcare, entertainment, and movie industries, those who intentionally choose to serve the devil and carry out his will. These people know exactly what they're doing, and some of them are very likely possessed, perfectly possessed. Okay, fair enough. I don't disagree, Patrick. Far from it. It's still stupid, though. And if I'm being too kind, I suppose maybe I'd rather, you know, maybe not say some of the ideas that come into my mind about these things. Stupid is a good word because, number one, you can say that on a family radio program. I remember back in the day when kids would call each other stupid head. So, yeah, I think it is stupid. And are there some people who are possessed by the devil? Yeah, I don't doubt that at all. Anyway, so back to Pennsylvania. Here's another example of stupid on stilts. This 8-1 vote, the Eastern Lebanon County School District Board of Directors decided to close up the locker rooms for the duration of the school year. Students who take physical education classes or PE have been directed by the superintendent, Julia Vicente, to come to school wearing gym clothes. Student athletes will be allowed to use locker rooms for a short duration of time before practices. Aren't you like hot and sweaty after the practice? No locker room for you. The directive, Vicente says, has been for the board to be able to consider options and respect the confidentiality and privacy of all students. The board of directors made the decision after parents repeatedly complained to the school board about the trans-identified students' use of the boys' locker room. The majority of parents raised concerns about the precedent being set. To hear one parent of the trans student in question says, to hear the language used, the hate expressed in my community, my school, made me sad, and I was really angry, not able to sleep at night, angry. So, what do the brainiacs do? They decide, okay, for all of you hundreds of kids, because this one student who's a boy who is wanting to use he identifies as a girl, and he wants to use the locker rooms and the showers, etc., where the girls are, and because you parents, you haters, you're the ones who are complaining that you don't want your daughters in the same room with this guy. I mean, it's bad enough that the daughters have to shower en masse as a group anyway. I mean, that's not good for modesty, et cetera, et cetera. But, I mean, we're way past that point. But you haters who don't want this young boy, this young man who's posing as a woman, to be in the same shower room with your daughter, guess what? You're all punished now. Nobody gets to use the locker rooms. That's how stupid this is. What's that, Simon?
It's ridiculous. And, okay, so we're a couple of old men talking about this, right? So what do we know?
I have
audio from one of the students that is dealing with this personally.
At the school in Pennsylvania?
I don't know if she's at the Pennsylvania school, but she's talking about the exact same problem in her school.
She's a high school student. And she's rebuking the school board, isn't she? Because she's at a school board meeting.
Exactly.
Yeah. So this is a high school girl who's rebuking these stupid so-called adults on the school board for these stupid policies. I'll let her speak.
Good evening. My name is Claire Mossman, and I'm a sophomore at Pleasant Valley High School. Last September, about 4 weeks into the school year, I was shocked and embarrassed to learn that I had been tricked into taking my clothes off while sharing a locker room with a male student. I was very upset and extremely confused. I didn't understand how my school could do this to me. I am a Christian girl, and I would never choose to take my clothes off in front of a boy. That boy is using my locker room at your invitation, and you didn't even give me a warning or an alternative option. All I got was forced compliance. It could be any male in that locker room watching us undress. It doesn't matter who the guy is. He does not belong in my locker room. Now, I have guys right next to me in the girls' bathroom. How could you ever believe that this is okay? This is the girls' bathroom. I have been to a few of these meetings now, and it is apparent to me that you are not at all considering how it affects everyone involved. My dad called the school this week to complain about my experience with boys in my bathroom. He talked to a vice principal about it. So later that day, she called me into the office, and in so many words, I was told that if being compromised and violated was a problem for me, that I could walk clear across campus to the single-use bathroom up front. Otherwise, too bad, it wasn't my problem, it's the law. What about all the other girls in the same situation as me? Are we all going to walk to the front of the school being late for class, risking getting in trouble just to be able to feel safe and honor our values when there's a bathroom right down the hall? You continue to say that you're here to serve the students and families in this district. However, it seems that that only applies to a select group of people. You have violated my privacy, you have violated my modesty, and you have violated my dignity. To other parents and adults in this room, please, we need your help. It is not just me. I have had countless other girls and guys as well come to me with their feelings and concerns about being violated the way we are. The entire student body is under assault, and the school board and administration are the ones assaulting us. Thank you.
My blood boils. I could just imagine the conversation that girl's dad had with the so-called administrator. I mean, every single thing she said is correct and obviously correct. And yet the fiends on the other side of this struggle are hell-bent, and I use the term advisedly, they are hell-bent on forcing this on everybody. So a few thoughts come to my mind. I think you may have a few thoughts of your own, Cyrus. Number one is, hey, everybody, here's a really great reminder that if at all possible, put your kids in Catholic school. Support your local Catholic school. And even if you're not a Catholic, put your kids in Catholic school. And if there isn't a good Catholic school near you, homeschool them. And you may say, oh, that's not feasible. Well, I understand times is tough, and I get it. But I can just say from experience, Nancy and I, you know, raised 11 kids, and she homeschooled. She was a stay-at-home mom. She homeschooled, and we were a one-income family, and we were poor, poor, poor for a long time. Which bill do we pay late this month? You know, it was rather frequent that our dinner in the evening was a delicious, wonderful bowl of boiled beans with some chopped onions and some cheese on top, because that's all we could afford. But we did it. And so I'm not saying that it's going to be easy or that it's, you know, a walk in the park, but it can be done. And for the sake of your children, if your kids are in schools like that, and more the schools are like that, you know, hit them with your pocketbook, because that's how these schools function, is they receive money on a per capita basis. Each kid in a desk at school every day, that gets tallied up, and that affects how much money they receive from the government. And if more and more people decide that I'm not going to put up with this nonsense anymore, I'm taking my kid out and we're going to send him to a Catholic school or we're going to homeschool, eventually they'll get the idea, because it will hurt in the pocketbook. So I really do think that when you as a parent, when you're looking at your innocent sons and daughters and you're saying, well, I want better for them and I don't want this for them, well, you may have to take some action. So first obvious choice, in my view at least, send them to a good Catholic school. Sometimes that's not possible. Homeschooling for most people is far more possible than you might imagine. All right, sorry, I'm done. I don't think I want to go. I think we did have another audio though, didn't we? We have...
Yeah, I've got a couple here. I have one from one of the female athletes who's speaking directly about being injured by a man
who's posing as a woman,
pretending to be a woman, right? And I also have a little bit of audio here from a former child gender clinic worker who has quit and now admits that the children's mental health is only worsened once they start those.
Do we have time to do both before the break?
You know, let's do the one. We have a little bit of time here. Let's do the clinic worker.
The clinic worker? Yeah. Okay. So here's the clinic worker. And this is, do we know exactly which clinic or
it's not disclosed.
Okay. So let's hear.
mental health was getting worse once they started the blocker. And that's against what the narrative tells us. The narrative says these interventions are supposed to make people better. We were pretty much putting anybody on testosterone at 13 and a half, if that's what they wanted. It was getting to the point where we were harming more patients that we were helping just by the numbers. What I am not in agreement with is this push to rapid medicalization of children. And it got to the point in the center where there was an actual directive that we were no longer allowed to use the phrase, I have concerns about a patient. And in medicine, that should scare anyone.
Yeah. If you're not allowed to express concerns for the sake of a patient, horrendous. Is there time to play the other one before we go out?
There is not. We'll have to play it on the other side.
Okay. So to set that up, that second, or actually this would wind up being the third one. This is Peyton McNabb. She's the female athlete who's sharing her own experience in competing with males who are posing as females to play in female sports, and not only things like losing because they're bigger and faster, etc., but also the injuries that take place as a result of this sometimes.
You know what's interesting, Patrick? I was going to share the audio from both of these. It's non-existent. You can't find it. It's been taken. It has been suppressed and deleted, and I can't find it anymore. So if I wouldn't have recorded this,
I wonder why.
If I wouldn't have recorded this right when I saw it, we wouldn't be able to share it because it is taken down so quickly.
Yeah. They can't stand for the truth to get out there because people are going to hear the truth and they're going to be, uh-oh, I don't agree with that. Or they do agree with what they're hearing from the truth tellers. Okay, so we have that audio. Thank you, Cyrus, for thinking ahead. And when we come back to hour three, we'll start with that. And then we'll dive right into your phone calls, 888-914-9149.